Assalamu alaikum. Greetings to everyone present. My paper also may not fit the categories of many quote academic papers because it's a combination of observation, experience, a long thought, as well as usual academic research and readings on the topic. We were asked to speak in relation to Malcolm and black liberation, African liberation, as I would prefer to call it. I'd like to start by saying that just by Allah's grace, fate, good luck, whatever you want to call it, I'd prefer the former. As a young person growing up here in New York, I was able to meet Malcolm X. My father, like many other people, was trying to escape from the gangs and beginning drugs of the South Bronx and moved us to East Amherst, Queens, 99th Street to be precise. And who should be living there a few doors from us but Malcolm X? My father never thought we would do that, run into him. And my brother and I, and many others, you know, we didn't know him. We looked up to him, we had heard about him, but we really never got to know him at the beginning. We did go to the local mosque, which was quite different from the Sunni mosque that we were accustomed to. We learned a lot. Whenever we could get there, we would go there, both the one in Corona, Queens, and the one in Manhattan, 116th Street, occasionally the one in Brooklyn. We also read the newspaper Muhammad Speaks, and we were getting an education there that we were not getting in schools, although we were going to some of the supposedly best schools in the city, namely Hunter College High School for me and my brother Stuyvesant High School, where we felt extremely alienated, isolated. We were learning the canon of the supposed great thinkers, but we were learning nothing about ourselves. And fortunately for us, through those avenues, we were able to, for the first time, begin to make the connections and to make some sense out of the what we were observing, what we were experiencing, and what we were being taught at school, which were in direct opposition to each other. I mentioned to a club I belonged to at Hunter, called the Toussaint Louverture of Visokampo Society, that somebody in my block was Malcolm X. So they said, can you invite him to come and speak to us? So, for the first time, I approached him directly and explained to him, and he said he would like to come. So then we approached our dean for the large-sized room. They refused, and they tried to convince us that there's no reason for us to hear this terrorist speak. You know, he was not a scholar. There's nothing we could possibly gain from him. We insisted, and they finally gave us a small room. And the dean herself and other members of the administration, who normally don't go to meetings, came to the meeting also. Well, Malcolm arrived early, well organized with his people. He set up his tape recording, and he accessed the audience, and he presented a talk. And he invited us after the talk to come and hear him speak in different places. Quite a variety. For instance, we went to Hunter College next door. We went to Baruch College, which then was all male. Hunter was all female. We went to 125th Street and 7th Avenue. Different places. And each place he gave pretty much the same messages, but very carefully organized and presented to each audience. By then, my father was getting very uptight. And he said, oh, no, don't bring this newspaper in the house. This is not true Islam, and so on. And how could they think they make this man like a prophet, and there's no prophet except the Prophet Muhammad, peace be unto him, and so on. And my father finally did go one time to 116th Street. This is not a mosque. I never saw a mosque with this kind of lecture-type presentation, and so on. So then we had to sneak the papers if we wanted to read them or read them outside. Anyway, we continued, and we did go also to visit. I visited the school on 116th Street, which was quite a wonderful institution at the time. Kids of 4-year-old were reading, and not only reading, but were reading important and relevant matter. Kids in the 3rd and 4th grade were doing research in their library. It was almost a military-type discipline. They were in separate sessions for boys and girls. it was quite the opposite of the most of the schools I had observed. So this is, I like to say that also his Malcolm's presence, even I remember at that time to me as a teenager, were, it was very impressive, but at the same time, not arrogant, not elitist, very approachable, very simple. He stood out in a crowd. You could hear a pin drop when he spoke, but at the same time, you could talk to him. So it's very hard to put all those things together, and I haven't seen it too often with too many other people. But he was, to say the least, extremely influential and impressive to me and others who were able to see him. I never felt the same sort of charisma and feeling in an audience until recently when Mandela came to speak, also to some degree when Maurice Bishop was speaking, and Walter Rodney. All right, now to get into the situation, the rest of the paper. In New York City, then as now, there was tremendous disunity and lots of problems. We didn't have crack, we had heroin. We had lots and lots of underdevelopment, as we still do. There were subgroups, political classes, political groups. Within the communities, there was a big gap between the Caribbean community and the African-American community. The small African community was smaller than now, the Latin community, etc. The usual ways that the system divides us. I believe that through Islam, Malcolm was able to transform and develop himself and was also able to put into practice his ideas in a way that neither the social workers nor the churches nor the schools had permitted him and many others to do. For instance, 116th Street and Lenox Avenue, where the main mosque in New York, number 7, was located, was a horrible corner, as it's pretty bad right now, too. And the only place where you could see some development, some organization, some sanitation in that area was the mosque. Yet, of course, they were always being condemned, and the black middle-class people were also condemning the movement as saying, including my father and others, saying, oh, what do you want? These are ex-prisoners, and these are the dregs of society, and so on and so forth, and they call themselves Muslims, they're not Muslims. So this was the kind of atmosphere that I observed. Maybe I'm wrong, but this is the way I took it. I think Islam, in terms of its basic beliefs, such as prayer, almsgiving, pilgrimage, jihad, the ummah, all of this we can see reflected in Malcolm's life, development, and work. In terms of its symbols and what they stood for also. And we don't have time to go into them, but I'll be glad to go into them during the question period if anyone wants. In terms of the regulated life, the discipline, the organization, the emphasis on the community and the development of a vanguard, but a vanguard that was non-elitist and for which every man could be a leader within the men and every woman within the women, and that each one was a teacher, this was something far different from the way the Christian churches and the communities were organized, and indeed from the way even some of the mosques that I've observed are organized. In terms of the self-defense that was taught during this period, and I understand may still be taught to those who follow some of those traditions, this was seen as a threat to many. But don't forget, this was a time when lynchings were even more rampant than they are now, literal lynchings as well as figurative ones. And the fact that everyone would be taught and trained on, let's say, how to be a productive member of your community, how to be a successful person in terms of your family, these were things that we were not taught, and we're not taught in society generally up to now. Islam, above all, I see as today the last competing system to international Western capitalism. And even then, it was seen as a threat, as it was during the slave period, when Islamic slaves were not recruited, not wanted, not because Islam was necessarily any stronger than any of the West African religions, such as Yoruba religion, Akan religion, etc., but because Islam is a religion that unifies and spreads and connects people regardless of their ethnic or language or class background, whereas all of the other West African religions were based in one ethnic group. Islamic peoples in West Africa, many of them, particularly the men during the slave period, were also literate in Arabic. This was something, of course, literacy was considered a problem and a threat. The concept of the ummah, or the community, we see the same thing happening now in terms of the Middle East situation. The community is not just the community of one ethnic group or the faithful, but everyone in the faithful belongs to this concept of the community. So this is something that's encompassing. They're trying to break us down into the most minute subgroups Islam, on the other hand, is one system that draws people in, creates a system of extended familyhood, brotherhood, sisterhood among all the faithful. This is something that, of course, would be a threat both in the slave times and now. The concept of the Ummah, of course, also implies how should you relate to other people outside of that community. And, of course, we could move it into the African tradition or the African-American tradition. Since we are here, we should emphasize that, of course, in that how we should emphasize your relationships with your brothers and sisters within your community, but also there are particular ways that you should relate to others depending upon their distance from your community and their relationships with your community. This is the concept. All of these concepts are not just about Islam or traditional African society, but they are concepts that we can use today in better understanding how should we relate to ourselves and how should we relate to others depending on how they relate to us and how closely or far they are from our beliefs, aims, and needs. Malcolm connected the four major elements within our community here, that is the African-American, the Caribbean, the Latin American and African, both in his own person. His mother, we know, is from Grenada. She was a product of rape. She was an immigrant. His father was from the South. United those two elements. He appealed to the Northern black people much more in many instances than Martin Luther King. He also pulled together in the organizations he worked to develop the Latino and the African elements, at the same time emphasizing the need for the mosque to be focused on the needs of the African-American community rather than the needs of immigrant Muslims of African or other origins, because their needs were different. Not that they didn't have good relations with them, but the emphasis, for instance, I remember some people that went to try to get their children in the school on 116th Street. They were Caribbean Muslims. They said, all right, but first we have to give preference to our people because our needs are different. You don't need to be socialized to know that you're a Muslim, to know that you're African. You don't need to have the same steps that we do. We have to give preference first. In other words, the community was a community, but there were degrees and levels and so on. And the need for socializing the African-American community and for working with the community that was supporting the school, because the community meant developing, organizing, and sharing resources. The community was not just a community that you come to once a week, but people were working together in all kinds of institutions, economic, social, as well as spiritual. And there was a complete overlap and integration of the spiritual in all of these organizations, which is part of the Afrocentric or African idea of holistic types of organization. It's not separate, each thing being separate as the Western individualism leads us to, but there's a complete overlap and integration of the spiritual, the physical, the psychological, and the social realms, all in our bodies. We're not separate. We can't separate our psychological from our social, from our environmental. This was being emphasized, unlike the disjointed and confusing way that most people had been brought up in the society, in this society. For example, the question of the black immigrants. Malcolm represented all these different groups in his own person and in his own associations. The black immigrants, especially from the Caribbean. The urban poor. The southern migrants. The working class. The lumpen. He went through experiences with the street people and all the vices and other things that the disenfranchised were exposed to. The inner city. The imprisonment. The conversion. Being converted, being born again, you might say, in prison. The African Islamic connection. He became a master communicator of the ideas he had been taught, both on the national, on the local, on the national, and on the international level. He was involved in research, in observation, in analysis, and pulling those in together into a method that he could communicate to affect constructive change in the community that he was working for. In terms of the 1990s, the U.S. communities today might be of color, black color and others, might be larger, growing, and more politically oriented than in 1964 to some degree, and to some degree we've gone backwards. They perhaps in 1964 were more organized and more political and more aware of just who they were. because since 1964, the system has created a black middle class. They have bought out many people, both here in South Africa and throughout the continent and in the Caribbean, by offering them some of the material benefits that supposedly comes to you if you go along with the system and join the middle class. So in a sense, maybe there's less consciousness now than there was before. We have the same task. If you listen to Malcolm's talks, his recordings and so on, except for his use of the term Negro, which was then in vogue, unfortunately, they still apply to our situation very much. All right, besides Malcolm's experiences in terms of linkage, umoja or togetherness, personal and social transformation, discipline in terms of morals, society and politics, Malcolm was constantly accountable in terms of his relationships with his family, with his community, and with the general African liberation movement. He was able to communicate organizational skills, and his organization was constantly teaching and training a younger generation called in the nation the Fruit of Islam. But this was an effort not to create a leadership that was aloof and above everybody, as we often have, but a leadership that was constantly and every week training and passing on the message and having junior ministers and junior imams and so on, which is something we don't do. I've seen too many organizations where when the leaders leave for one reason or another, the organization collapses. The concept of nepotism. Nepotism we find in many of our organizations, meaning that people give jobs and positions to those who they're actually related to. Within the nation, anyone who joined, of course there was some nepotism we know in terms of the leadership, in terms of Elijah Muhammad, we don't have to go into that. But in terms of Malcolm as a person, he was very careful and no one could accuse him of going that route, which also often alienates many people. His concept of a vanguard was a vanguard that was an accountable vanguard, that was non-patronizing and non-elite, and a vanguard that had to be more disciplined, more respectful, and more accountable, and to work harder than the masses, which is quite the opposite of many organizations, as we know. From Ethiopia to Somalia to Tanzania to Senegal to Trinidad, Guyana, Grenada, and Cuba, some of the places that I have lived and worked and studied in, Malcolm is known and respected in all of these places. There are many, many printings of his bibliography, of his biography, sorry, and of his writings. I just came back from a conference in Cuba, and we were talking about Malcolm. Of course, the same people who organized this conference were in a conference in Cuba on Malcolm last May, international conference. People are constantly buying out every edition of books on Malcolm. His ideas apply to us not only in Harlem or in New York, but everywhere. And I think this is something that we need to see, that he was a national and international figure. His bringing the case of the African-American genocide by this country before the United Nations was a threat, just as Garvey doing similar things was a threat in those times. He is part of a long history and tradition of African and Islamic anti-oppression liberation leaders. Now, oftentimes, I'm going very fast, of course, because of our limited time. Oftentimes, Malcolm is accused of being sexist. And, of course, sexism is a major weakness and disunifying problem in our society and in our organizations. We certainly can't afford to mistreat or not allow to develop to their potential over half of our population. Women in African and Islamic societies are not, as they're often portrayed, generally under the boot of men. They're generally, in most societies, is a parallel, complementary, and very respectful relationship. There's a variety of types of relationships. I can't go into all of them. For instance, the Akan, a matrilineal society, has certain relationships that the Yoruba do not have, etc., etc. But generally speaking, it is not true that African women are underneath the men, don't have any word, and so on. So we have to be very careful because they have purposely stereotyped our cultures of origin so that we don't look towards them for any examples. Not to say that they don't have a long way to go just as we do in terms of sex relations. Because as sometimes it's said, we are third world, second sex. Of course, we reject both ideas. We don't call ourselves third world. If anything, we should be the first world as the most numerous. And second sex, if we don't walk together side by side, work together in every respect, we have no hope. Malcolm's relations with and influences from women were indicative of the various stages and transformations of his life, For instance, the influence of his mother, although she was taken from him very early because of her illness, probably caused by the very horrible situation and environment that she was forced to live in, that black people were forced to live in here, that causes many of us to have mental and physical illness up to today as we know. His half-sister Ella Baker was a very profound and long-term influence on his life. On the other hand, we look at the way he related to women during his street period, the transformation in jail and with the Nation of Islam in terms of what that organization as an offshoot of Islam believed about male-female relations and so on. His marriage and relations with his wife Betty and his kids, in fact the very act of marrying a black woman, a black woman at the time when most so-called leaders were marrying either white or very light-skinned people, was a very revolutionary act. At least to me it was, because if you look back at most of the leaders at that time, you could see that there was more than just an individual choice. There was a tendency to make the question of integration include black men marrying only light or white women, especially the more power they had, the more leadership they had, and the more money they had. So his relationships with women such as Sister Yuriko Chigawa, his relationships with students, including people like me, not that I was anybody in terms of any importance to him, but I'm saying the way he related to us, with respect, encouraging us to be more involved, to be more assertive, not telling us to step. He was encouraging us to get involved, encouraging us both to be supportive, to have respect, to give respect, and to go about their business without being attacked and maligned and so on. Not that anyone should be attacked no matter what they're wearing, but I'm saying that quite often we confuse putting on a scarf or wearing some sort of traditional clothing with being repressed. Why should we be any more repressed wearing our own clothing than wearing Western clothing? If we buy into the Western system and change according to each season when the styles change, we're making money for the system. If we are wearing our own clothing that usually is made of natural fibers and so on, we're being backward, they tell us, old-fashioned or repressed. Well, if it makes sense to you, it doesn't to me. So in summary, I'd like to say that despite the police attack, despite imprisonment, despite long history of early repression and mental subjugation that we all have gone through, despite the assassination, Malcolm's ideas continue. As far as I can see, he is definitely a part of the long historical tradition from ancient Africa, through modern Africa, the Caribbean, including Abu Bakr in Trinidad this summer, up to our heroes and heroines here in this country, a tradition, radical Islamic and African tradition of liberation, of community orientation, of fighting against the Western capitalist system that has sought to destroy us in every way and still tries to do so. He was telling us to form our own communities, our own institutions, not to give our children to our enemies to destroy, which we unfortunately are still doing, to buy from ourselves, to share, to buy in a wholesale manner. These things are very much needed up to today. I think that out of this long tradition of Islamic African liberation, you could say, and I would say, that it is a socialist tradition. It is a progressive tradition. It's not just a cultural nationalist tradition. Socialist and progressive, why? Because Islam and traditional African societies, long before Marx, Engels, or anyone else, were communal, socialist, sharing, developing, redistributing societies. I think in terms of the writings of Nyerere and others, who have gone into this which in more detail than we have time for now, we have to try to control our media, our schools, and our community. We have to try to develop our own resources, and our most important resources are our minds. If we do this, we'll be following not only Malcolm, but the long history of African, Islamic, progressive, socialist orientation. Thank you.